This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Ian Eagle, play-by-play man, will join us. We'll do a little bit of everything. His thoughts on the NFL preseason, the Jets, who he's been covering, some just general NFL thoughts, NBA, just get his thoughts on a lot of different things. Always excited, always an interesting conversation to have Ian on. But I will start here with baseball. And these races starting to take shape. Did a bunch of it earlier in the week. John Legesa, the Bear, Chris Felica. I would say the National League is starting to become clearer and clearer. Phillies, Dodgers, and Brewers all in pretty good shape here to win their divisions. I would think the two West teams are in good shape to make the playoffs. And then it just comes down to that final wild card, Braves, who you'd favor over Mets, throw the Giants in there, and that's the National League. American League is a little more interesting. I think the Astros have pretty much put away the West as they are beating the Orioles as we speak here, 6-0. And if that score holds, it leads to some interesting developments in the AL East. But give the Astros the West. That, what a collapse from the Mariners. Boy, they had leads a couple of times against the Dodgers, couldn't hold them. They had a 10-game lead over the Astros pretty late in June, not like, hey, early May, late, whatever. Not that you could build that big of a lead in May, early May, late April. I think it was June 19th. They had a 10-game lead. They are now a 500 team and 6.5 games out. That is just an epic meltdown, epic collapse for a team with pretty good pitching. But I do think those guys at the top of the rotation, Kirby and Gilbert, are a little bit overrated. But guys like Wu and Castillo, I mean, they do have good pitching. It's hard to be this bad for this long if you're the Mariners with that kind of pitching. But again, it's just a weird year. Astros are going to win the West, which leaves the other two divisions. Guardians, after losing 2 out of 3 to the Yankees, which I'll get to, 2 up on the Twins and 2 up on the Royals. Royals and Twins with identical records. So that's an interesting race. Guardians minus 155. They've been wire to wire. These other teams have gotten close, but every time they got close, the Guardians have kind of pulled away here. And they are minus 190, Twins plus 225, Royals plus 450. I don't mind a long shot on the Royals plus 450 here to win the division. They have Witt. They got Reagans and Lugo at the top of the rotation. That's a pretty good team. If I was going to take a bet on anything, it would be Royals at plus 450 just at that price. But the interesting development here, again, if this score holds and 6-0, Astros lead the Orioles as I'm recording this. So I'm assuming the Astros are going to win this game. This would put the Yankees a game and a half up on the Orioles. Yankees are now minus 190 at DraftKings to win the division. Orioles plus 145. Boy, it feels like this is the first time in a long time. I know it's only a 1.5 game lead. This feels like the first time in like a month, maybe even more, that somebody's led by more than a game. It seems like every time I'm doing these shows, it's either they're tied or somebody's either up one or down one. A game and a half and 2 in the loss column. Remember, you cannot make up another team's losses, so loss column is big. Up 2 in the loss column. And not just up 2 in the loss column for the Yankees, which feels like a lot compared to how tight this has been throughout the summer pretty much. But look at the next 6 games. Yankees are home for the Rockies for 3 and then at the Nationals for 3. Meanwhile, the Orioles, who have not played well, they don't get good pitching. Their pitching's all hurt. Eflin, who was tremendous for them, is on the IL. Burns is not the same pitcher, which is a quiet little subplot. The Orioles' next 6 games, 3 more with Houston this weekend, and then 3 at the Dodgers. So, boy, if you go like 2-4 in those, and the Yankees put together like a 5-1 stretch, which I know is asking a lot. I don't care who you're playing. The Yankees find ways to lose games to everybody. It seems lost games to the White Sox, lost a couple to the Angels. When you think the Yankees have a soft schedule, you know they can come back to bite you. Meanwhile, they play well. They sweep the Phillies in Philly, so you never know with the Yankees. That being said, Yankees do have a chance this next week or so to put some separation between themselves and the Orioles. And this is the first time in a while where I probably, if I had to bet it, I know it's minus 190, I would recommend a bet on the Yankees. I think the Yankees are going to win the division. I think the Yankees are in a position now where they've, I don't want to say put the bad baseball behind them, because those will be my famous last words. I'll be sitting here in a week cursing them out saying, how could you lose 2 out of 3 to the Rockies or lose games to the Nationals? I still do not trust them. They still have holes. But give credit where credit is due. Cortez stepped up and pitched a big game on Wednesday night, and Cole followed suit. Wasn't dominant in terms of the strikeouts, but Cole followed suit on Thursday and gave you a big performance. Now, this is 2 in a row for Cole where he's been pretty much lights out again. He's not the 8-10 strikeout stuff of just complete no hit, nobody putting the ball in play, kind of dominance you're used to from Cole, but it's better than what he's been. He's starting to look like the Cole of old. And I thought Wednesday was a very important game. And I've been hard on Nestor Cortez, and I think rightfully so. But give them credit, because they were coming off. You could sense the Yankee fans were starting to get restless after the Tuesday night loss. They lost, I mean, of all the bad losses they've had this year, and they've had plenty of them, the loss Tuesday night coupled with the Sunday night loss. Tuesday night was the extra inning game where Cleveland blew it open late. Yankees had a million chances in extra innings, couldn't hit a fly ball, base hit, left a million guys on base. That was following the Sunday night game, the Little League game. And by the way, I meant to mention this Sunday, boy, they really shoved that Little League stuff down your throat all game. ESPN did, interviewing 12-year-old kids, Joe Torre talking to Little League. Oh my God, they would not stop with the Little League, enough with the Little League stuff. I know you're trying to promote your Little League World Series or whatever, but we don't need to hear all game from these 12-year-old kids. But Yankees blew a 1-0 lead in the ninth inning Sunday night, and then to lose that game on Tuesday, Yankee fans are just starting to just be completely fed up. But the other side of that coin is Baltimore just has not been able to harp on it, to seize on it, to put distance between themselves and the Yankees. And now the Yankees are in a position where if you can just beat up on Colorado, who's terrible, other than the White Sox, about as bad as anyone in the league, especially away from home. They're a little feisty at home. They're terrible away from Colorado. And then go to Washington and beat up on the Nats. And if the Orioles continue to struggle with their pitching, I would expect them to continue to struggle. Yankees can put themselves in a position where you can get like maybe a 3 or 4 game lead. And hey, it's not insurmountable, especially with how streaky the Yankees are, how streaky all these teams are, and they still have a head-to-head series in September. Remember now, no more tiebreaker games, which I hate. I thought those tiebreaker games were great. You're tied after 162 games. You have a one-game playoff. We don't do those anymore. It's head-to-head record, and right now the Orioles have beaten the Yankees head-to-head, so they would win a tiebreaker. So keep that in mind. If they are tied, Baltimore has a half-game invisible lead, so to speak. But Yankees are in good shape to open up some distance between themselves and the second-place Orioles. Orioles just continue to struggle. Orioles just – every pitcher is hurt. Burns is not as good. So both these teams have problems. It's amazing how mirror images of each other they are, where hot at the same time, struggle at the same time. Luis Gil gets hurt. Yeah, but Eflin gets hurt. Yankees closer blows a game, but Kimbrel blows a game. It's really sort of eerie, the parallels between them, and they've been so close all summer. A 1.5-game lead, 2 in the loss column feels like the biggest gap there's been in quite some time. And look, I don't want to be in the position to take Judge for granted. And I feel like sometimes, oh, Judge just hit another homer. Oh, Judge hit two. What Judge is doing is, boy, in a league where there's only a handful of 300 hitters, we talked about the other day, I think there's like 8 guys hitting 300. With his average, his power, 48 homers after a bad start in April. I mean, why anybody pitches to this guy, I have no idea. Now, there's certain times, hey, bases loaded, tie game, anything. Of course, you can't walk them there. I don't think you can walk them there. But other than that, like the Thursday game, it was 1-0. I don't know. It was scoreless, 1 out, nobody on. And they challenge him, and he gives up a home run. Like, just walk him. Make Austin. I know Austin Wells is developed nicely into a solid bat with some pop. Austin Wells is not Aaron Judge. Make Austin Wells be. And now if Soto is behind Judge, different story. You don't want to just put guys on for Soto. I get that. But if you can get Soto out, I don't know. And I'd be interesting to see in the playoffs how teams handle this. And Judge has not been a great playoff player, to be fair. He has not been a good playoff player at all, which is not unusual. Bonds, A-Rod, a lot of these guys struggled in the playoffs until they had just monster breakout postseasons. A-Rod in 09, Bonds in 02. It'd be interesting if these teams just say, hey, you know what? Why bother with this? Take your base. We'll give you the 4 balls. You take first, and we'll make somebody else beat us, because there's just not a lot of protection behind Judge. And Judge is just such on a different level. The MVP debate is over. I think as long as he's just healthy for another week or two, anybody making a case for Witt is just making a case just to make a case. Judge is the MVP. What he's doing is unbelievable. If you froze the season right now, 333 with 48 homers, you'd say, wow, that's an MVP season. He's still got 6 weeks to go. So absolutely incredible. I don't want to ever take it for granted, because look, he's not young. Probably a couple of years from now, he's going to be slowing down, and you're going to look back. And I'm sure the Yankees are going to look back too, whether they realize it or not, and say, boy, we had Judge in his prime. We had Cole in his prime. We had Soto. Did we do enough to give this team a chance to win a championship? Because they should have won a championship in this last 5 or 7 years with all the talent they've had and just being like one player away. So that's the baseball National League. I think we know our 6 teams. We at least know 5 of them. And then the 6th one up for grabs. American League Central up for grabs. AL East up for grabs. But the Yankees a chance to take a stranglehold. Astros have the division clinch. And I think it's going to be Royals, Twins, 2 from the Central, and then whoever loses the AL East, whoever comes in second. I don't think the Red Sox are going to make the playoffs. They've a nice little comeback here in Houston, and maybe they can get some help with Kansas City, losing some games along the way. But boy, I just think Kansas City has enough of a lead to probably make the playoffs, which would make for a wide open playoffs and a fun playoff. So it's been a weird year. We got football this weekend, baseball pennant races, but coming up next, it is Ian Eagle. We will talk to Ian next. This is a Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back, and he is back. He is one of the great broadcasters of all time, and he's the legendary Ian Eagle, CBS, TNT, Yes Network. I can go on and on. Ian, what's up, man? Do you ever get too old for the back-to-school feeling? Are you in that mode right now?
Wait, I'm sorry. I thought I was booked for Will Hill's podcast, the former Giant and Raven safety currently in the UFL. This is not what I thought I was doing.
Distant relative.
What's happening? No, man. Great to be with you, William. No, I never get sick of it. It's part of the allure of this job is that every year feels different. Every year is unpredictable. Every year there are new storylines, there are new players, there are new themes. This year there happen to be some new rules with the dynamic kickoff, and it never gets old. So to answer in a roundabout way, no, I'm ready. I'm ready like I've been ready the last 28 years of doing this in the NFL.
What's a little like 1 or 2 minute just explanation of how you get ready for a season? Because you're doing football, basketball, NBA, college basketball. A lot of these transactions take place in March when you're doing other things. You just have to go team by team, review all the transactions. Do you just kind of take it as it goes? What's kind of your process to get ready?
Yeah, great question. I used to live in the space where I was a draft nick and was completely into that. And I felt strongly that that knowledge would then filter over to the start of the NFL season. Probably about 7 years ago, I pulled away from that and realized when it's time to learn the guys, when I get them, assign them, I'll learn it. I'll get the background, I'll catch up. And I think that freed up a part of my brain. I might have been losing some bandwidth along the way as the years start to stack up. So my approach has been attack the preseason. If you're doing a local package like I do with the Jets, that means you got to be all in on that. You learn enough about their opponent, Washington, Carolina, the first 2 weeks, Giants, the third week. So now you have a good feel for some teams that don't necessarily pop up on your radar, which I'm comfortable with. And then the fact that I do radio on Thursday nights, not every game, but a bunch of them, puts me in position to end up seeing more of the league than I would see if I just do television. Bunch of teams that show up on Thursday night that I may not see on a Sunday. So each week becomes its own entity. If I have two games, if I'm juggling the two games, then it's a little bit more of a crash course on Monday. And if it's just the one game that particular week, I can ease into it a bit, chip away with each day that goes by. And now we have that bye week that's built in. That's completely different and I would say appreciated, to be perfectly frank, because I got used to doing that fourth preseason game that was always on a Thursday. And then maybe you'd take Friday, Saturday off, and Sunday you would hit the books for week one. Now, end of the preseason, there's a legitimate week in between where I will shut it off and probably drink alcohol, which is not something I often do once the season starts and the year starts crossing into one another with NFL, NBA, and college hoops.
Yeah, we're probably going to go from 3 weeks of the preseason to two pretty soon. I would think they're going to add an 18th game, just a round number to have 18 games. So you don't need to worry about like the Titans right guard. I'll worry about the Titans when I get the Titans. That kind of thing where, okay. Yeah, makes sense.
I finally got to that place. For many years, I was in the former mentality, which is I need to know everything and I need to know it by August 18th so that I could be ready for the season. And I think I realized that that often became information overload and I've got to lock in on my game. It's important to know my game. I'm not doing an NFL talk show every week.
Right.
I'm doing my game and I have to be an expert on those two teams. So you have to immerse yourself in that. And obviously if I'm doing a Thursday night game as well, radio is different than TV in that you're not digging quite as deep into storylines. Once the game gets going, a lot of that would be more pregame and filler. TV, that's an ongoing process. You're calling the play, but you're also being a traffic cop and trying to get into personal and biographical information as much as possible to help illuminate the viewer.
And you probably, it'd probably be hard to learn it all at a place where you didn't need to refresh anyway. So if you're going to refresh, might as well just take it when it comes. Yeah, makes sense. You've been around the Jets a lot. You've done their first couple preseason games. What's the vibe you get? They've certainly been in the news a lot this summer, last summer. I'm high on them. I think this thing about Rodgers, that he won't play well because he's older, I think he's going to be fine. I thought he was dealing with a bad thumb 2 years ago, which people forget.
Yep.
I think the line's better. I just think they're loaded. But what's the sense you get? And what's your take here on the Jets?
It's funny because we spoke a year ago, and obviously there was a great deal of optimism about the team based on Aaron Rodgers being there and feeling as if you had pieces in place to make a run. Rodgers goes down four plays into the Jets' first possession, and that turns the season sideways. I actually believe their roster is better today than it was a year ago. If you go player for player, what their final 53 looks like will be better than the 2023 version. Yet I don't know if there is the same enthusiasm for the general NFL fan based on the fact that Rodgers is coming off a major injury. He's a year older, and we know how it works in this league. You have to see it to believe it often. But if you're asking me from a personnel standpoint and then from the vibe I'm getting around the team, they've been quieter. And the fact of the matter is not being on Hard Knocks is probably a part of it. When you're on Hard Knocks, you can't help but be in the conversation, especially if it's a compelling team, which the Jets were, and Rodgers was such an intriguing figure in all of that. They're doing it a little more quietly. Haason Reddick has been the biggest story to come out of Jet camp because he's not there. And maybe that's a good sign for the Jets, that they don't have all of this heaped upon them expectation-wise like they did a year ago, and the buzz is not quite as palpable. But I think their team is actually better, and they're more equipped to actually have success this year if things go the way that they think they'll go with Rodgers being healthy and running the show.
Yeah, and they play San Francisco week one on the road Monday night. If you're a Jet fan, you got flashbacks. But after that, it's a lot of Titans and Patriots and Steelers and, you know, Vikings on a neutral. So,
yep.
Well, the AFC, if you're in the AFC, you have such a tough schedule. I mean, look at the Bills schedule. Bills have a gauntlet of a schedule. These teams, especially if you have a first place schedule. Jets, as far as an AFC schedule, it's really not that bad. So I think they're in for a pretty good season. Do you get the sense that they'll sign Reddick? Do they think they'll sign Reddick, that they'll work something out?
I think they are a bit perplexed, and I'm not sure they ever thought it was going to get to this place. The rhetoric behind the scenes seemed to be that eventually they would be okay, that Reddick's representation had a clear understanding of where the Jets stood, and the Jets had a clear understanding of where Reddick stood. It looked like they were going to increase the money for this year and try to make them whole, but it was still going to be a prove-it deal. And that's not where we currently are. Two very different views of this situation. I just can't see the benefit, if you're Haason Reddick and his agent, of sitting out the year. They maintain your rights, and you're going to find yourself in the same position other than the fact that you've lost a year of production, and you've now taken a huge hit reputation-wise around the league. Reddick was a really good player for Philly. Obviously, the Eagles did not see him in the classification that he saw himself. And financially, what he's looking for, Philadelphia was not going to pay it. I'm not sure the Jets are going to pay it either, but I think the Jets thought they were going to get a motivated Haason Reddick on that 1 year, go do your thing. And if it's not with us, it's going to be with somebody else because you went out and ripped off 16 sacks and made the Pro Bowl for the third consecutive year. Obviously, it's played out a completely different way.
Yeah, and I think the point you brought up is the key one, where the Jets retain your rights. He's going to be 30, I think, in a couple weeks, and 30 in the NFL. That's getting up there. And if you fast forward to your 31 next year, it's like you're not 23 anymore. So I don't know. I don't know what his end game is. Yep. Rodgers, you've been around the league a while. He's been around the league a while. Just, watching him on Hard Knocks, I kind of liked him. Dry sense of humor, funny, yep. Sarcastic. Knowing you, the little I do, you have a sense of humor. My guess is you guys get along, and that I don't know, there's this perception that he's kind of a weird guy. And if you see some of the clips, I understand that. But what is Rodgers like when you get to know him?
Your spidey sense is correct. All my dealings with him have been very positive. He's got a wry sense of humor. He's got a sarcastic tone to him. But when you start really talking football, it's PhD level. And his ability to understand it, process it, explain it is right up there with any of the other QBs that I've met with over the course of my career. And I've been doing the NFL on CBS since 98. My first game for CBS was Peyton Manning's first game as a pro. And I remember that production meeting being blown away. I walked out thinking, oh my goodness, like, is every NFL quarterback like this? And then I realized, no, this was Peyton Manning. He just has a different understanding of how to conduct himself, present himself, and how to explain the game. Rodgers is in that class. Really interesting guy to speak with. I think in Green Bay, at times, it depended upon what mood you were getting him in, what was going on with the team at that point. Now, I was paired with Dan Fouts for a long time. So when you get a quarterback of that stature walking into a production meeting with a quarterback that appreciates history, recognizes greatness, you're going to get some pretty good conversations. But even outside of Dan, Aaron's just always been very interesting to talk to. And yes, in that setting, very likable.
Yeah, makes sense. He's a ball buster. He comes off as, yep. Now, again, he's gotten, I don't love every quote from him, but the perception of him is interesting compared to, at least watching him on Hard Knocks. Preseason's tough because we don't see any of the players really anymore. But
I know you've seen
the Panthers, you've seen Washington, you'll see the Giants this week. Any nugget from any of these teams? Hey, this team's going to be better. This team's going to be worse than maybe people think. Any player that's jumped out to you? Take it whatever direction you want to go.
William, it's always funny when one player makes a big play in a preseason game, like Jaden Daniels did against the Jets, a long play downfield, something that he changed to. He noticed something that the Jets were showing defensively. They're showing nothing. It's vanilla offense. It's vanilla defense. Sean McVay is literally running everything other than he will run come regular season. He's not going to give you any kind of pathway into understanding what his thought process is for this year. But when someone makes a play and it brings you out of your chair for a moment, you store it away. And the fact that Daniels came in with confidence and the team responded to him in that manner, what does that mean in the grand scheme? Who knows? But I do think there is a bit of a presence with him from what I've heard. Carolina didn't see one starter, literally not one starter play. The Jets, the only starter that played was Joe Tippmann, the center. I believe it's the first time in my broadcast career in our open, which is the start of the broadcast, that we featured a center. I don't think we've ever done that before. I don't know if it'll ever be done again because he was the only dude that was playing in the game. So we're at a reflection point now with NFL preseason. I've been doing these games a long time. I've never seen it quite at this level. I know every coach is different. I remember quite vividly when the Jets would play the Eagles in the final preseason game. And that was the first time I remember, and it might have been Herm Edwards and Andy Reid, both basically saying, oh, I'm not playing anybody. You'll see nobody. And that was a eureka moment for a bunch of coaches around the NFL. Like, no, I'm good. I don't need to see any of my guys. So for the NFL, a league that prides itself on the games mattering and feeling big and having meaning every week, the games matter in the scope of a 17-week season. Every game is important. These preseason games, there's not a whole lot of people in the stands. You don't know the names of the people that are participating. And then the storylines, I've backed off of this, making a huge deal about someone that scores 3 touchdowns in the last preseason game and then never hearing their name again, ever, in an NFL camp. You have to take it all in context of what it is. It truly is exhibition football, and the league for many years shied away from that, but that's where we are right now. I don't have the answer, so I can't solve it. I agree with you. At some point, they're going to go to 18-2. I don't know if it's going to be next year. I think it might be a little bit more down the road. They want the Players Association to be on board. They don't want to unilaterally just make this a thing. They want partnership on this. Will that change things for head coaches now that they only have two preseason games? Will they play their guys a little bit just to get them in there? These joint practices have become the points of emphasis for GMs and head coaches to make decisions. I think that's the closest thing that they're getting to true evaluation at this stage.
Yeah, at least it used to at least be the third preseason game was the one where you at least got a half of people. It was a dress rehearsal. Now you don't even get anything. Any sense of the Giants? Neighbors looks like he's going to be a big-time player at receiver. Yeah. Other than that, I don't really know what they have, if much. Dable, I think, is a hell of a coach. The fact that he got six wins out of that team last year is a miracle. Won a playoff game the year before. I think he's tremendous. But other than that, I don't know. What do you have here on the Giants?
I agree with you on all fronts. I think Neighbors is a number one guy, which is something this team has so desperately needed. And the fact that they now can possibly build this offense up with him as a centerpiece. Look, Devin Singletary, he's probably a placeholder, but there is this trend in the NFL that you don't need a bell cow. You can win without it. You can find guys. You can manipulate it a bit. They'd like to think they improved their offensive line. We're going to find out with the new guards in play and some of the money that they doled out for that. I think defensively, they're going to be better than maybe what is anticipated right now. Just working on my prep work for the game. They've got some pieces defensively. I think their numbers will be better defensively. I know that it's a new coordinator and that situation didn't end well with Wink, but I do think they can be competitive on that side of the ball. And look, I'm not going to dismiss the headline. It's going to come down to Daniel Jones and whether or not they can get back to where they were 2 years ago in the playoff year, where they limited his mistakes. Brian Dable tailored so much towards him. I agree with you that Dable's a tremendous coach. I don't know how this thing is going to go. If this is a 5-6 win season, I'm not sure how this will play out for the Giants. I still think within their building, they have expectations and they believe they can compete. I'm not sure the rest of the league agrees with them.
Yeah, and if they ever had a bad season and they blamed Dable and they fired him, which is, look, it's the nature of the NFL. You don't get too many consecutive 5-6 win seasons. I think it'd be a huge mistake and somebody would snap him up very quickly. So, I don't know. That'll be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. A couple quick ones before we get out of here. Your son Noah is a star, did the Olympics, was tremendous.
No,
what was that like watching that where you're watching him, everybody's watching him, people watching Team USA? It's not like he's doing, you know, Arizona State at midnight, only a few people watching this. He's in the spotlight. He's doing great games. Just talk us through what that process was like.
Well, here's the thing that I've learned with you. He might be on at midnight doing Arizona State. I'll get a text from you. So there's somebody watching, and he knows, very similar to my approach to this business, there's always somebody watching. So you do your best work no matter what level the game is, no matter what network the game is. That's a family philosophy. It was a thrill, truly. You know, my wife and I looked at one another countless times over the course of the 2 weeks and just had that feeling of, how did this happen exactly? Look, I can't relate to what Katie Ledecky's family feels when she's winning gold after gold after gold. But there was a moment there where my wife and I were like, our kid's at the Olympics. He's doing the Olympics. And it was beyond cool. And it was nerve-wracking watching the game, U.S. against Serbia, U.S. against France, and then U.S. women against France, watching as a fan. It was nerve-wracking because the games really could have gone either way, and it changes the course of history. And then it was nerve-wracking as a father, because it's still your kid, and you know that there are a lot of people tuning in to this, and the calls are going to live forever. So it was truly amazing time for our family to sit back and watch him do his thing and then come back and call a Charger preseason game like 3 days later after landing. He was in LA doing Rams Chargers with Dan Fouts, in fact. So that's a full circle moment as well. But
Easton Stick ties. Talking about some Easton Stick on the Chargers. Yeah, for sure. It's a little different. When you're watching that, I want to ask a couple more things. But quickly, are you focused on the game or are you focused on the broadcast? Like, oh, he's on top of this, he's on top of that. Are you broadcast-centric or the game-centric, or you're kind of taking it all in at once?
Yeah, I'd like to tell you that I'm focused solely on the game and the broadcast just fades into the background, but that would not be a fair statement. No, I'm locked in on the broadcast side of it. And you know, my wife obviously now has watched a lot of basketball between the two of us and listened to a lot of basketball when Noah was doing the Clippers on radio for 4 years. So she'd watch a net game and then listen to the first half of a Clipper game before going to bed. This was not a person that was exactly into the NBA before this whole thing popped up in our family. And she can notice things and hear things and has become a very advanced viewer and listener because of it. So we can have conversations and she will ask me legitimate questions about approach and why something was said or why something was not covered. And it's impressive the level of conversations that we now have in regards to it. The one thing that I don't do is inundate my son with notes. I'm not going to send him 15 things about the game. I pick and choose my spots. I try to view it through his lens. If I was on the receiving end of a text in that moment, what is it that I would want to hear or want to know? I remain very positive. If anything, I might Oreo cookie something occasionally with a good comment, a constructive criticism, and then another good comment. Basically what I did in fatherhood in general before broadcasting even became a part of it. That was a big part of my approach to get my message across, but do it in a way that resonated and was something that both my son and my daughter could work with in their everyday lives. So I end up focusing a great deal on the broadcast side because that's just how my brain is wired. It's hard to separate yourself from that. Even when I'm watching a normal game, it's hard to separate from that.
So your year starts right about now and it ends in May. Last May, you had Thunder Mavericks. It was your last sort of assignment and you were in this weird position. And I was texting you about it where you didn't have game 6, but if there was a game 7, you had it.
Yeah.
And you're either going to call game 7 or your season is over. What is that? What is sitting through that game like? That was a wild game.
That is a bizarre setup. That's where your brain goes 50-50. There's part of your brain that's now been on the road for 165 days or whatever it is. And you say, okay, if it goes one way, the season's done and vacation starts, or at least mental vacation starts. If it goes another way, there's a chance at a game 7. And as we know, William, in game 7s, that's history. There's something that could happen that's never happened before in those situations. So it's a push-pull, completely tug-of-war setup. Part of me wants that game 7. You want that moment. You want to be there. You want everything that comes with the thrills and the drama of a game 7. But there's still a part of you that says, man, if you told me it's over right now and I can go have a Kona Big Wave, my beer of choice, which is what I did, by the way, once that game ended, Dallas won in 6. That's okay too.
Wild game too, because OKC was up 20 something points. Then they, you know, it was back and forth where it looked like they took control. Then it looked like they were out of it and they tied it. And then they foul out Alexander. And that, I really thought OKC probably were one game 7. I thought they were going to win that series. That was a weird series in general where Luka was hurt. Then he was fine. It was back and forth. That was a hard series to get your arms around. Last one before we get you out of here. I appreciate your time. Last time you were on, we talked about the Nets and I was like, man, they don't really have a direction. Which way are they going? They have a direction now. They trade Bridges. I thought it was a great trade. You get your stuff back from Houston. You finally just sort of pick a lane. You got a big return for Bridges. What's your thoughts here on the Nets going into the season?
Yeah, they needed to control their own destiny, and their destiny right now is trying to evaluate talent, figure out who's going to be a part of this thing moving forward, and then accumulate talent, which is through the draft. And the hope is that this is still a potential destination for somebody down the road. You can't earmark a particular player and say, that's the one. Even the Kyrie KD marriage was very last minute. It wasn't like it had built up over a month period and then boom, it happened. They basically got a phone call saying that, hey, they're both in. And that was it. It wasn't courting. It wasn't flow charts and pie graphs with this is our plan. They never had that meeting. So as much as we like to think that all of these teams have a clear plan, clear idea of how things are going to go, you got to have a bunch of plans. The first plan now is build this thing back up, get the coach in place, which they did, that they believe in, that he can create a culture, and probably get back to what they were doing prior to KD, Kyrie, Harden, which was building a reputation within the league with agents and players that this is a place that you want to play, that this team and franchise treats your family well and does the right things and makes your life better. That's probably how they're viewing this. And oh, by the way, you got to catch a break in the draft lottery. You got to have the ball bounce your way and get a top 2-3 pick and then scout your ass off and figure out which one of those guys is going to be a part of your team moving forward.
Yeah, you got to get the ball to bounce your way. You got to hope it's the right year to get the right pick. You got to hope that guy's good. I mean, you could sit here and say, hey, to get the number one pick and you just go through these drafts. It's not a guarantee of anything, and you can still get a good player at somewhere you're not expecting. But should be a lot of fun. I appreciate the time, man. Thanks for coming on. Hopefully we'll do this again soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. Look forward to hearing from you. Random times, random days, random events. It's always a thrill when I get the text, and you always have good points and you always make me laugh. So that's a good combination.
Keep you on your toes. I guess that's what I'm gonna do. I mean, I appreciate
always.
It. Thank you.
All right, bud. See ya.
All right. Thank you to Ian Eagle. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy football being back. Sort of. We are getting closer and closer to the real thing. Full go college NFL. So rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back Monday. See you then.